Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to Dwell, a Searcy Institute podcast for homeschool moms by homeschool moms. I'm your host, Renee Mathis, here with my other host, Karen Kern. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Renee. Good to be here.
It's good to see you. Today we are continuing our series on discussing chapter by chapter through the book Norms and Nobility by David Hicks. And I'm going to let Karen remind us of the really exciting news about this book that y'all need to know about. So take it away, Karen.
So yes, this book has been around for a long time, but the problem with it is that for not being a very big book, it was a very expensive book. It was over $50, I think, to order it, because the company that published it, University Press of America, kind of had it set at a price for a college textbook, but it is now being redone at a much cheaper price, around the 20s, I think. And so David Hicks has a new forward at the beginning, and Andrew, my husband Andrew, has something to say at the beginning as well. And I'm sure that we'll be selling it eventually, but it's still being sold by the publisher. And if you were just to even Google Norms Nobility, A Treatise on Education, you'd be able to find where to purchase it. But it has been published by University Press of America, and I believe that they're the ones who are redoing it. So it is much more available to you, and it'll be updated and things added to it. So that's helpful too.
Good news. Yeah. I have actually already pre-ordered mine.
Oh, you did? Where'd you pre-order it from? From the publisher?
Amazon.
Amazon. Yay for Amazon.
I got it. It will be on my doorstep when it comes out. And for those of y'all like me, if your Norms copy right now is so full of highlighting, you can barely see the original print.
I know. Look at this. I'm going to hold this up so you can see my pages from this. It's just written all over.
Mine too. Now, my copy is autographed by David Hicks, so I will never get rid of it.
Right, of course.
I'll autograph a new one, but anyway. You owe it to yourself to get a new copy, folks, because you've learned, you've grown, you can always make more highlights.
So. Yeah. And you can always read them side by side and go, oh, this time I noticed that. I didn't even underline that last time.
That is right.
Yeah.
So for those of you maybe who haven't, really dipped your toes deeply into the water of Norms and Nobility, it's a great book on classical education, on the philosophy behind it. And it's also a very deep book. It's a little hard in parts to get through. I would encourage you that if it feels hard, just to keep going and skip that part, and the next paragraph will probably make a lot more sense. Or find a group to read it with. That's always fun. You can reach out to Karen or I on our Facebook group page, or maybe find a group of your homeschool mom friends and you all can meet and talk about it. I mean, reading in a community is always a great idea, but maybe you just want to sneak a little page or two every now and again and work your way through it slowly. And that's also wonderful because a chapter a month, the way that the pace we're going is plenty slow and plenty, you have plenty of time to gain some things from it. So in chapter one, we are on chapter one today, and the title is Virtue is the Fruit of Learning. So Karen, when you hear about virtue in the context of classical education, I bet a familiar definition comes to mind.
Yeah, yes, it does. Right away, I think about a definition that Andrew made up, and I know that he didn't make up all the ideas, but he kind of took a variety of ideas and put it together in one sentence. And that is that classical education is the cultivation of wisdom and virtue by nourishing the soul on truth, goodness, and beauty through the liberal arts, so that the soul is able to know and enjoy God, or to better know and enjoy God. And so it seems like in classical education, whenever you hear virtue, you're going to hear wisdom close by. Right? Or they're like pair. They're like pair. Wisdom and virtue. And I think think that makes sense.
Yes, because what do we mean when we talk about wisdom? We usually think about what you know, right? But also knowing the right thing to do. Not just knowing facts, but knowing how to do and how to behave and how to be and how to live. But you have to pair that with virtue, right? Why is it the right thing to do? Because it has to do with our character and the kind of person we want to be, right?
Right. It seems like virtue is acting rightly on what you know. And so, you know, you use your wisdom to come up with what to do in a certain situation that may have two difficult options. You don't know whether to do A or B. And you know you should do B, but B is really hard. Mm-hmm. So it's the virtue that enables you to go out and do B, even though it's hard, when A might be easier, because you know that B is the right thing to do, and it's hard. So it seems like virtue is one of those things that's required when things are hard.
You need that to see you through the hard times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and then I also like the definition with the word cultivation, because this chapter that we read today asks the question, can virtue be taught? And it also answers the question, yes, it can be taught. And it goes into how it can be taught. But the word cultivation just implies so much about how it's taught, right? It's not like, oh, we just teach our kids about virtue one day and they've got it. It's like, it's a lifelong cultivation that requires care, mm-hmm, and time and attention and wisdom and knowing the person that you are teaching. It's like a plant. Different plants need different amount of water or sunlight. And the same thing with our children.
Right.
It's not a one size fits all.
They're not. And it's not a factory. And that's why I like cultivation, because it implies for the long term, long haul, you're growing something here, and things don't grow overnight. And I also love cultivation as related to the word culture, because we're going to build our home that supports what we are doing. When we sit around the table and learn our ABCs or our times tables, that particular piece of learning is supported by the entire culture that's around it, the paideia, the air we breathe in our home. And of course, that spills over into the churches we go to and the way we spend our leisure time and the neighborhoods we live in. So cultivation and culture both go together. Hicks says on the top of page 18 that classical education is not preeminently of a specific time or place. So that's good news. If you're thinking, I don't know if I can do this because I think of classical education as something historical, or, you know, for those people back then, and what on earth does that have to do with me now? has a lot to do with you and your children. Mm-hmm. He says it stands instead for a spirit of inquiry and a form of instruction concerned with the development of style through language and of conscience through myth.
Mm.
So, as we know, classical education is very much concerned with language arts, with grammar, logic, and rhetoric, and the trivium. The first part of the first three of the seven liberal arts, but the development of conscience through myth. That's really another way of just saying we're going to teach virtue through telling good stories.
Yeah, or it harkens back to Vigen Groyen's book, Tending the Heart of Virtue, for me, about the moral imagination and the power of story to develop that in our children of knowing the virtues and being able to recognize them and then having the courage to act on them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Didn't C.S. Lewis say courage is really the first and foundational of all the virtues? Every virtue comes down to courage.
Well,
back to what you said earlier about doing the hard things when it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the key word, he goes on, the key word here is inquiry. And then it talks about the kinds of questions that we ask and having to do with our imagination as we come up with hypotheses and devise methods for testing the hypotheses, which sounds kind of scientific, really. But, he says later in that paragraph, the inquirer may even seek confirmation for his hypothesis in an emotional or religious experience. How else ultimately does one test the value of a poem or the validity of God's love? So when we hear the words inquiry and hypothesis, we're not just talking about scientific method.
Right.
We're talking about getting to the bottom of things and asking the questions. So that reminds me of later in the book, you know, where he talks about normative questions versus analytical questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how an analytical question is like a what question. Whereas a normative question is a why or a how, maybe, where, you know, because children need to be able to answer the analytical question. Like, for example, I was thinking about this in relation, you know, the story, the book, Little House in the Big Woods,
mm-hmm.
You know, where, do you remember where Laura fills her pockets with the little pebbles and then her pocket rips? Maybe you don't remember. I taught that book so many, many times that it's in my mind, talking about what people should do. And it's like, as a teacher, you could say, you could have a literature guide that says, how did Laura's pocket rip? Her pocket ripped because she put too many pebbles in. That's an analytical question. But when you say, should she have filled her pockets so full? You know, should she, in that story, she's angry at her sister. Should she have those feelings toward Mary? Whatever. When you ask those questions, those are more normative mm-hmm. questions. And I think that they inspire curiosity because you have to think more deeply.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we ask those questions anyway. We read about someone's story and we think, would I have done that? Should I have done that? What should they have done? Is this the kind of person I want to be friends with? If I hung out with this person, what would I be like? Would I be doing the same things they're doing? And would that be the right thing to do? And those are normal human questions because we're curious and we like to learn. And that's the way God made us. Hicks is going to spend time in this book talking about, you know, some of the problems in today's educational world. And he mentions that a classroom that rejects the classical curriculum tends to deal with human experience very narrowly. Students who don't know what questions to ask then don't know what to do with the information that they're given. And there's no basis for attaching learning to behavior. And so we're going to hear this a lot in Hicks's book.
Right.
It's not enough just to know something. We have to know how to act. And we have to take that knowledge and wisely apply it by doing the right thing. And as, you know, as parents, as mothers who are working with our children at home, that is a huge part of what we do all day is, right, teach children how to react, what the right thing to do is, what that, you know, what is called for in this particular situation.
Yeah, there's a quote on page 20. Right in the middle of the page, the purpose of education is not the assimilation of facts or the retention of information, but the habituation of the mind and body to will and act in accordance with what one knows. You know, and that's what wisdom. It takes wisdom to be able to figure out what that is, but and then virtue to do it. I said earlier.
When it comes to acting on what we know, that's a huge advantage of life in the homeschool world, is that we don't have to spend hours and hours every day on quote unquote academic subjects.
Right.
We actually get to put this thing to the test and live life together. And what better way to learn to act on what we know, to be in a family or a home with other people who you sometimes don't get along with and who sometimes might rub you the wrong way, or you might have to listen to and obey in the case of your parents. So homeschool moms have a great chance to put all of this into practice.
Right. It's a great opportunity and responsibility. I was thinking about this when I was reading this today and yesterday about, you know, in particularly in upper school, when children go to school and they're in a school setting where they have one teacher for math and one teacher for biology and one teacher for English and so on, they only see that teacher for an hour a day, and they're in a class with 30 other students, and those teachers have probably 120 to 150 students coming through their classroom a day, and they can only go so deep in this whole question of the pursuit of wisdom and virtue, or cultivating that in their students, because they can't possibly have the relationship with them that a mother has, a homeschool teacher has, or a co-op teacher has, where you have just a few students. And it's in the relationship that teachers and students have together that wisdom and virtue can really be sorted and thought about and acted on. And the teacher gets to know that student so well because they see them so frequently that they're able to encourage and notice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's almost impossible for a teacher in a school setting to notice and be able to pour into a student in those areas, you know, other than grading their papers. And so, like you said, in the home, it's the perfect place to learn these things.
Yeah. When you're a teacher grading those papers, you don't have the student sitting right there in front of you.
No.
Immediately reach out and talk to them about where they're struggling or what they needed help with. I know I found last week, my husband and I got a chance to spend all week with four of our grandchildren. And these were ages, one turned four while she was with us. And then we had a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old. Now the 12-year-old, and we were doing school this week. This was all. Yeah. Oh my goodness, we were so tired. I'm just now getting over it, but I am getting over it.
I know.
You know, grandparents are either tired or lonely, and I'm getting over being tired now.
That's right.
But to do school with the 7-year-old and the 9-year-old every day was so much fun. And it just brought back a lot of good memories with my own children. But it's great. You forget that you can do so much in such a short amount of time when you homeschool. You don't have to spend hours and hours. And I know my husband was like, is that all? Are we done with school already? We did this and this and this. I mean, we did, we had our Bible morning time in the morning, and then we were doing handwriting. They did handwriting on their, we did all the reading and the language arts and math, and then we alternated history and science. And we were reading poetry together. We were outside going on nature walks. We have a bird that lays its nest on a particular breed of bird in our area, lays its nest on the ground. So we had two brand new eggs on the side of our house that they could go out and look at. You know, just time to be. And
yes,
when we did the paper and pencil stuff, I was right there. And so if something went awry, you could gently put them back on track. Right. And then,
right.
And it was so fun.
Yeah. So that's like, you know, we talk about teaching from rest. Mm-hmm. And that's an example of it. Not that you didn't get lots done, right? But the pace is appropriate to the children and to the task.
Right.
And you just see what you've done and you call it a day and you go outside and then you do, you know, you went to the zoo and stuff, right? I saw pictures. So.
We did lots of other stuff.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, we'd be like, where are the kids? Oh, they're outside running. I mean, we have property. They ran and ran and ran. And we'd look outside and see them zooming past the windows. And it was a lot of fun. But very, in a sense, restful as far as the schooling went. Because the other thing, I've done this long enough, but this would be a word of encouragement to you younger homeschool moms. You don't have to get it done all day in one day. It's okay to set the timer and say, okay, we're done with this for today. We've spent good quality time on the subject and we're done. Whether or not we got to the bottom of the page or the end of the quote unquote lesson, we put in good work and we can go do something different now. It's kind of a Charlotte Mason, right? Keep it short and stop while you're ahead kind of a thing and go
right.
And enjoy the next thing. So the idea that we have to cross everything off a list on one day and get everything done, or we're not doing it well, that just leads you down this perfectionist.
So what do you say? Like, I was thinking about the some homeschool moms, if they were out in business, they'd be the CEO of their company, but they're not there. They're at home with their mom, with their children. And they still have that, drive or that tendency, that God-given ability to do things excellently, and they want their children to also do things excellently, whether that's their math paper or setting the table or making their bed or cutting the grass in straight lines, whatever it is. So when we talk about virtue and wisdom, that is a very high bar, you know? To talk about that as the end of our education sets the bar really high, and you can easily feel like you're failing, or you see faults in your children and you think, oh no, this is not working. Or, you know, you can drive yourself crazy. So I don't know. What do you think about how do we have a balance? I don't love that word, but how do we check ourselves from not becoming so perfectionistic that we drive our children crazy, or maybe our husband's crazy.
Yeah.
Ourselves crazy. I don't know. Like, how do we make sure? How do we talk? What do we say to ourselves? You know, this is, I don't know, this is good enough.
Yeah. Part of it comes, of course, I would encourage a mom who's struggling with that and say part of it comes with experience and practice. So you have to give yourself grace and realize you will not get good at this overnight. You may not feel comfortable with this overnight, but you have to give yourself time and let it kind of seep into you. You may need to do a lot of slowing down if you're that perfectionist mom, or figure out that maybe you can apply your tendencies to want to do everything a certain way and just right in your own sphere. Like if you're a seamstress or you're a painter or you have creative projects, let yourself be a perfectionist when it's just you.
But that's a good point. Yeah.
When it's your kids, ease up. let them be kids. Let them, you know, keep that good sense of humor. Always, you know, try laughing, making a joke and smiling before you immediately jump to wanting to scream and yell and pull your hair out. Right? Because yeah. That usually doesn't accomplish what we want it to anyway.
Yeah, and I think check yourself if you have the tendency to want to go behind them and redo what they've done.
Mm-hmm. And then part of that, again, it's learning how to teach as well.
Yeah.
Certain things that you teach can be fixed with let's erase that and try it again.
Right.
Others, you realize, you know, this is an idea or this is something that needs coaching over the long haul. It's not going to be fixed in one day. And so learning how to assess ourselves as teachers and how to assess our children, when you realize assessment should bless, which means
right. The
fruit of assessment should be, we all want to do better next time, but we also can go to bed tonight satisfied that we did our best today.
Right. And some of that comes down to a tone of voice, mm-hmm. you know, or a simple gesture, like you said, a smile, you know, and because sometimes children, particularly firstborns, can be hard on themselves. And if something is hard, they don't want to do it because they're afraid of failing. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to say, I used to tell my third graders, if you can't make a mistake, you can't make anything. You know, you have to be able to, you have to give yourself the freedom to try. And when it's hard to make a mistake and go, oh, I need to do that again. And that's hard. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for some children.
I always love the phrase, it's hard now.
Right.
Yes, that has the expectation it might get easier, right?
Right.
If I practice and work at this, it's not always going to be this hard. There is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Or I'll get better and it won't be that hard next time.
But yeah.
It's okay to say it's hard now. And the same with you, homeschool moms. It's hard now.
It's hard. It's
first year. Maybe you're swimming in diapers and feeling like you're not going to get your head above water. It's hard now.
Right.
There are seasons when different things are hard, right? There are seasons when, you know, you've got this homeschool thing down, you've figured it out, but now all of a sudden you're dealing with teaching a child to drive and they have their first job. And, you know, you've got a whole different thing of slew of things to navigate. So there are always going to be hard things.
You know, it just never really gets easier. No. it might get easier, but never gets easy.
Never gets easy. Yeah.
Even when you have grown children, and I love them all and I love all my grandchildren, but you know, there's still challenges.
Of course.
Still challenges, of course. Mm-hmm. And watching your children parent is a huge blessing, and to be able to participate in that in some ways, like you got to last week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, come over because back to the whole virtue and wisdom. It's multi-generational.
Mm-hmm.
Too, passing on the things that we've learned. And we haven't really talked a lot about, you know, well, at all really in this, but it's in here, it's in this chapter about truth, introducing your children and feeding on truth, goodness, and beauty, and how that relates to virtue. And in all the different ways that we introduce them to that and we nurture them on it.
Right. You know, we talk about the good life.
Right.
The theoretic life.
Right.
But he says it's a life of virtue, so long as we mean by virtue all that the Greek arete expresses, the life that knows and reveres, speculates and acts upon the good, that loves and reproduces the beautiful, and that pursues excellence and
what model. Page are you reading?
21.
Right. Oh, right. The middle. Got it. Yeah.
Pursues excellence and moderation. Of course, that word there, arete in Greek, that's the same word Paul uses in Philippians when he says, if there is anything of excellence, think on things. And so as Christians, there's so much that we need to be pursuing and thinking about and dwelling on. All of it, it's excellence. But this life of virtue, is he doesn't say it's knowing your times tables, getting a certain score on the SAT or getting into a certain college. It's what kind of a person are you?
Right. Right. That loves and reproduces the beautiful, can recognize and do what is good. Right. And pursue truth and want to live by it. Yeah. So, you know, he has that whole section in part 3 of Can Virtue Be Taught? And then in part 4 of How to Teach Virtue. I think we've touched on a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Conversation here.
That's one of the things that Plato's dialogues focus on. Can virtue be taught? And I would say that's one restful way of thinking about homeschooling and teaching, is that you don't have to have a separate virtue curriculum.
Right.
Realize that.
Right. Oh, yes.
You don't have to have a virtue workbook. Really, it's okay. Just like we were saying earlier, you know, you can learn virtue making your bed.
Right.
And feeding the dog and not hitting your sister. You know, there's all kinds of ways to practice virtue. But whether, you know, you're gifted in a certain subject or in a certain art or a certain talent, we all need to know how to.
Right. And there, you know, there's that other way of looking at virtue, that virtue is when something is acting in accordance with its nature. So, you know, a virtuous coffee pot makes coffee the way it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, a virtuous refrigerator is keeping things at the right temperature. And so it relates to the idea of skill too. We teach virtue when we teach our children how to hold their pencil,
mm-hmm.
or we teach virtue when we teach them how to do a layup in basketball, right? Or how to tie their shoe. All of these things that are skills are also in the realm of virtue. It's just not the things we think about.
Right. I remember David Hicks, he mentioned coffee. He said once, classical education is coffee-flavored coffee. I think what he meant was, you don't have to add all the this and the that and the stuff that takes away from being what it should be. Let's just educate our children. It doesn't have to be complicated.
Right. Yeah. Well, this was good. I think we've been going for about 30 minutes here. And talking about chapter one, virtue is the fruit of learning. And chapter two is called the word of truth. So if you have a copy, we are going to come back and do this in a few weeks again. But the next chapter is the word of truth. So if you have a copy, skim it if you want to, or if not, just come back and listen to us talk about chapter two. And next time we will have another guest with us. And thank you for being with us today. Nice chatting with you, Renee.
You too, Karen.
And here's to home.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.